My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Our training camp coverage will continue here in our Beltway Blitz on 106.7 The Fan. All of our camp coverage on The Fan is presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice, covering the Nats trade deadline and the Commanders ahead of the 6 p.m. deadline today and after a practice out in Ashburn. We are busy multitasking on G&D. So without further ado, let's get to our Beltway Blitz. Andrew Golden of The Post. So Andrew, let's start with the story of the day here. Is Kyle Finnegan going to be traded, in your opinion, before the deadline 2 hours from now?
I think the answer is yes. I think that ultimately you look at the value you can get for him. He's one of the best relievers in baseball. I think teams are very desperate for relievers. I think two relievers were traded since I got on this call. So I think if you look at the market and the value for relievers, I think that there's going to be a team willing to pay up for Kyle Finnegan and kind of match that value that Mike Rizzo wants. So I think it'll happen. I don't think that there's any need to trade him. It's not like they absolutely have to, but I think there'll be some team that's willing to pay the price for a reliever.
Did last night's kerosene hose to the fire change his value at all?
I don't think it significantly changed the value at all. And I think I tweeted about this last night too. The Diamondbacks hit a lot of balls hard last night. I think the reality is, you know that that's a possibility with Kyle Finnegan. He gives up his hard hit percentage like 51-52% of the time. So, like every other hitter, basically, you're giving up a hit that's 95 miles per hour or faster. So I don't think that anything last night was a surprise to any team, if that makes sense. I think people kind of knew what you were getting with Kyle Finnegan. Still one of the best closers in the game. I mean, you're not second in the majors and saying that you're not good enough for it. But I also think that he has some flaws, and I think that kind of showed last night.
All right, so I'm going somewhere with this, but out of 100, it sounds like at least 50, but what do you put the percentage chance that Finnegan gets dealt before the deadline?
I don't want to take the cheap way out and say 50-50, but that's really how I feel. I really have no clue. I think it would make sense to do it. I know I said that they would trade him, so I'm going to say like 51%. I'll say 51%.
All right, so I think that's totally fair. The reason I ask is because now I want to ask you about Dylan Floro, who I'm imagining has a number that starts like with an 8 or a 9.
Yes. I mean he's an expiring contract. Obviously, when you look at the future, you can sign a reliever like Floro again next off season after that. So I definitely think I'd be really, really shocked if they did not trade Dylan Floro. I think there's definitely value out there for a reliever of his kind. I know you also gave up a home run in his last outing to lose the game, but when you look at Dylan Floro, Floro is one of the better reliever setup guys in the game, and so I think he'll definitely get a return.
Andrew, this is maybe hard to answer right now in the moment as we're on trade deadline day, but what are these moves in terms of shipping off guys that may be under team control, thinking of Lane Thomas and potentially Kyle Finnegan, what do they mean for this offseason and beyond in terms of the team's design and when they're looking to compete, et cetera? What do you think it means?
Yeah, and in terms of what it means in the bigger picture, I definitely think those are two pieces that could impact them. But I think obviously you're looking at, you know, Wayne has one more year until free agency. Kyle Finnegan's, I believe he turns 33 heading into next year. So when you're looking at that in terms of the timeline of when it makes sense for them to compete and when they'll be able to compete, I think you're seeing those guys on the back end of their careers, and especially with Finnegan being 33, and obviously relievers are still ball time. I even think of Lane. There's so much outfield depth. I just don't think beyond this year. Like, you know, you look at Dylan Cruz coming up. You obviously have Pinckney. You have Dalen Lyle. You have Nick Hassel, who I know has been hurt on and off, but obviously he has some talent too. And so when you look at that, I just don't really think in the big picture that those two guys necessarily fit into what they're trying to do. And so I think it makes sense to sell them. I thought the Lane Thomas trade made sense yesterday. It's a tough one to deal with, obviously, but I think it makes sense. So I think when you look at the bigger picture, I think you're skewing young and you're trying to get as much value as you can so that way they can compete in the future.
Do you think that and Andrew Golden of the Washington Post, who's covering the trade deadline, which is coming up at 6, is with us here on Grant and Danny. Do you think that they're going to spend this offseason and actually, like, ownership and the learners I'm talking about clearly, actually get back in the mix here with some real major league talent in free agency?
I think part of the factor is how they finish up the season too. I mean, I think it depends on where the team trajectory is. I mean, like, you obviously see the pieces there, and you see, you know, Jake Irvin playing well, CJ's an all-star, right? But I think there are some question marks. Like, are they really ready? I think that's a good question. Like, are they really, really ready to contend? I mean, Mackenzie Gore has had a really tough month and a half here, and he hasn't looked that great. And obviously, there's Kaber Ruiz is the question. Luis Garcia is taking a step forward too, but like, I think it's a matter of do they believe that they're in a place where they can spend. I think they should definitely spend this offseason. Like, I think they have enough talent, but I definitely think there are more question marks. And so, obviously, I think they should spend for sure. I mean, you want a team to be competitive, and I think they should, but it's just a matter of how much they're willing to spend and what pieces they really need to fill on the roster this offseason.
Andrew, thank you, buddy. Have a great day.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, guys.
We'll see you, pal. Hit that MLB sounder, Darius. About Chelsea Janes to cover the trade deadline, MLB at large here on the Beltway Blitz. With us, Chelsea, give me a theme here. What's your big picture on this trade deadline so far?
I think it is that the cost of pitching has been egregious, unbelievable, sort of hard to understand. I think a lot of the deals we're seeing have just demonstrated the fact that you've got to really, really pay up, even if you want a mid-rotation starter. And I think a lot of contenders are hurting a little bit because of it.
The Orioles are fascinating to me because they're right up 95. It feels like they've got a legitimate chance to win a World Series. And I was really hopeful a few weeks ago, maybe they'd go out and they'd trade for Tarek Skubal and give up a couple of their top prospects, or even, you know, a tier down from that, maybe another front of the rotation type starter. But it doesn't seem like they're going to. They opted against trading their elite prospects. They did give up Norby, and it sounds like Kyle Stowers for Trevor Rogers. What do you make of what Mike Elias is doing, or as it kind of turns out, not doing? They've made several moves. They've added some decent players, but they really haven't made the epic splash.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what he says when the deadline passes tonight about how the price of pitching affected his plans. I think, you know, when you look at what it took to get Trevor Rogers, who, if we're being honest, a lot of people probably hadn't heard of before this afternoon, it took Morby and it took Stowers, both of whom, you know, I think if you heard that they were going somewhere, you probably would have thought it was for a frontline guy. I mean, that's a decent package right there. So, you know, I'll be interested to see how, you know, what people were asking. You know, I think Tarek Skubal was probably going to take Holiday plus. And that's just kind of a really high price to pay. So, you know, I agree. I think they need more top of the rotation help. But if what they felt comfortable with was middle of the rotation stuff, and you hang on to some guys who might be able to get you more when the market settles, if it settles, maybe that's smart. But I think there are a lot of people who are looking at them thinking, you know, did they do enough? And only time will tell.
Chelsea, give me a buyer that you think has helped themselves a lot, and give me a seller that's done well for themselves with a different context.
You know, I think the Rays are the seller. I think the Rays have played this perfectly, and we'll probably see some more deals later. I mean, they're just really good at what they do, and they've gotten a lot back and taken advantage of this market, I think, in a really smart way. And then in terms of buyers, you know, I actually really like what the Guardians have done. I think, you know, Lane Thomas is a really good baseball player, as we know, you know, a 25-25 threat who will slot right in there and really help them and give them experience. And then they just got Alex Cobb from the Giants. He hasn't pitched this year, but when that guy pitches, he's good. his only problem is health. So they've kind of gotten a 2-3 type starter who hasn't pitched yet this year and is therefore fresh coming off the IL in a couple weeks, will really help a rotation that's been pretty injury riddled and you know, that they've still been able to ride in the first place. So I think they've done a really smart job without giving up a whole lot, made some really good deals on a budget like they always do, and you know, reinforce themselves for the stretch.
Paul Skenes pitched again last night for the Pirates, went 6 innings and gave up a run. He's got a 1.90 ERA at this point with a sub-1 whip. What do you make of the historic season he's turning in after being at LSU last year?
Yeah, he's unbelievable. In an era where people like him, you know, aces who go deep in games are supposed to be a dying breed, he is, you know, the newest of them. You know, it's like a new generation, and it's one guy, and it's him. You know, he looks like a guy who could pitch a lot of innings. So far, he has been that guy. The stuff is unbelievable. The mindset appears to be very consistent. You know, he has barely struggled, if at all. You know, every start has been almost as good as the rest. So, you know, I think he's just one of those rare guys that if he can stay healthy, and frankly, even if there is an elbow injury that knocks him out for a couple years, I think he's just really, really good, someone who wants to pitch deep in games and can. And I think the kind of starter we've all seen go by the wayside in recent years probably will continue to see go that way. I think he'll be a rarity and a real treasure to watch for the next few years.
Chelsea, if the Nationals called today and said Kyle Finnegan for Paul Skenes, who says no?
I think the Pirates say no.
The Pirates might say no there.
But, you know, you never know. I mean, you got to make the call, right? Due diligence, as Riz always says.
Yeah, you got to play to win. Chelsea, thank you as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
See you later. Hit that local 53 sounder, Daris. Our guy, Earl Fursey, will talk about that group whose names should change immediately. Earl, what have you made so far? Big picture from training camp, your thoughts, position battles, how they're mixing it up. What do you like?
I like the fact that Jaden Daniels is looking the way he was, guys, when, you know, we last left off a few weeks ago. You know, the early returns were great. There's no drama, except for, you know, here's the biggest thing for me, and I don't know if you noticed the other day. You know, Ron is back. You saw him the other day, right? He's doing work. He's going to be doing work as an analyst, our good buddy Rivera, on NFL Network, apparently, at times this year. So we get to hear all his takes on how well the Commanders are doing. No, I think everything's great. I do have, Danny, I'm with you. It's not concerns about, and this gets at the Brandon Coleman thing, the left tackle, what they're doing with a third-round pick, and I'm not saying he can't play. Look, I put this out because Rooster talked about it. You know, first of all, Rooster is worried about is why is there a basketball out at Ashburn and other stuff. Why is there your basketball out here? Which is great. It's just great to have football back. You see, I'm all over the place. But the Brandon Coleman thing, he puts this out the other day. Well, he's working with the ones, and I kind of piggybacked on that. It's kind of basically that's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off because, you know, third round pick, and I know it was high, a third round pick, 67, I think, overall. But, you know, it may just be a thing where the offensive line that they inherited, the new staff, new regime, it's just so bad that, you know, a guy that they can coach up a little bit, and it's not one of these top-tier guys, which was kind of my point. And then I get, of course, you know, all the fans are like, well, just because you get the third-round pick doesn't mean he can't play. Of course it doesn't. And look, we know this franchise. We had an undrafted guy that Joe Gibbs thought was a defensive lineman, become one of the best tackles of his era in Joe Jacoby. So we know that. But the point is, and I've said this to you a couple of times, that if you're not picking these, they're like quarterbacks to me, left tackles. You've got to get one of these premier guys, not to say he can't be. I think it's a risk what they're doing. But here, let me give you a stat. And I pointed this out to the person who was on me on Twitter about this and never heard back from him, by the way. There are 15 other teams, gentlemen, in the NFC, correct?
Yes.
Other than the Washington Commanders. Those 15 teams, how many do you think have first-round picks at left tackle?
4?
10.
12.
Mm.
12 of the 15. Now, it's not the only way, but there's kind of a formula there in the NFL that, you need a stud quarterback, and that's, some would say, maybe the most important position on the team. I think it's the second one, certainly, at left tackle, and I think it's incomplete right now. And they couldn't fix everything in one off season. I understand that. They didn't obviously want to spend money on some of the top tier guys, the older veterans that were out there to at least shore it up for a year or two. So we will see. But, you know, that we'll find out for sure when the, you know, the real games start, week one, if that's the right answer or not. I'm not sure.
Earl, it's a small thing, but they gave away bucket hats to the fans and it was packed again today.
Yeah.
I love the idea of giving something away. That's a baseball tradition, baseball game thing, bobbleheads, whatever. You almost never see it anymore at NFL games because you don't need to do it. Yeah. There aren't that many games, a little more demand for your supply. But just to give something to fans as they walked in, I thought was pretty symbolic and cool.
Yeah, they're doing something for all these fans. Now, I think today, wasn't it just season ticket holders again? I'm not sure about that. But, yeah, you know, they're making the effort, right? And this goes back. They've only been the Harris group has only been in charge just over a year now. So, I mean, this is it's a complete overhaul of this organization, really, from where we were just a little over a year ago, guys, with players, two-thirds of the roster turnover, new quarterback, everybody, you know, except for, you know, a handful of people in that building are new people, in essence. And it's an organization remake that is in progress. It is the renovation when you kind of have to tear everything down to the studs or foundation and start rebuilding. They've done a great job. And it seems like Adam Peters, at least, you know, and Dan Quinn feel like they have a team that they like a lot. You know, and it gets back to what I was saying about the tackle and everything else. And they're really, at this point, happy about the way things are looking on paper. And maybe it's just about that guy that apparently, if you watch Hard Knocks, that the Giants were willing to trade up for, even though they say they're fine with Daniel Jones, who missed a wide-open guy in practice today. So there's optimism from people we trust, and I think that's, you know, kind of what I'm taking away here, that it's okay right now, and everything's fine, and it's been quiet and drama-free. DC is good. What we've all been through for three decades, and we've already seen reports. You know, it started day one of camp for all these teams. Elsewhere, people with players going down. So just keep everybody healthy, no drama, quick practices. That's fine with me, and we'll see in week one.
Earl, thank you, brother. Always appreciate it.
Yep. Yep.
Our guy, Earl Forsey, on the Beltway Blitz, breaking down the Commanders. You'll hear him every 30 minutes or so all day long right here on The Fan. He just referenced the Giants and their Hard Knocks behind the scenes for their offseason decision-making. That's how we found out that they wanted to trade up.
Yep.
It's Tuesday. Tonight.
Tonight.
Another installment. I actually found myself this afternoon when I thought about it. I'm like, wait, did I miss that last night? Oh, no, it's Tuesday. It's tonight.
I've done that three or four different times.
I was super excited.
Yeah.
Like, this season, I've over-talked about it.
Uh-huh.
We have not had an installment of Hard Knocks at this level, this quality of program, since the OG when they followed the Baltimore Ravens. No one knew what to expect. And it was just groundbreaking, earth-shattering, never-before-seen access and behind-the-scenes fun.
Have there been three episodes or four? Three, I think?
Four, at least.
Four? So yeah. I think three of the times I've come in on Tuesday being like, oh, I missed Hard Knocks last night. And you guys have both, I've said every time, that's because it didn't air last night, it airs tonight. I'm just off rhythm about it.
Tremendous.
It's so good.
The idea that we get to see the all-access pass to the interviews before the draft, the calls to free agents, conversations with agents. We have found out, it sounds like, that people on the other side of the phone didn't always know that the calls were being recorded, which is
so good.
Curious, but also makes it even better. It has been ultra compelling television, and another episode tonight has me fired up.
And Hard Knocks with the Bears debuts next Tuesday.
Does
so,
it really?
So it goes right into, yeah, from off-season right into training camp. It's great.
We'll only have a quick little respite early in the year, and then we'll have the in-season version following the AFC North, I believe it is, right? The Steelers, Bengals, Browns going to be heavily featured in the AFC North with the Ravens. So very, very cool. Speaking of access and interviews, every head coach is going to be mandated to talk during games this NFL season. Will that add anything to your viewing experience? Let's get into that next, right here on Grant and Danny. Taking you up to 6:30 this evening, we're Grant and Danny on The Fan. Steve Wyche of NFL Network was at Commanders training camp over the weekend. We'll talk to him about what he saw. I always like the perspective of some of the national NFL media types like Steve, who go to a bunch of different camps. He's been at four or five training camps. So you could juxtapose the feel of Washington versus other teams, and specifically some of the really good teams. Energy, excitement, work they're putting in, pace of practices. I think that's valuable. So look forward to catching up with Steve in that regard. Danny, one of the big stories we wanted to get to yesterday that got left on the chopping block was the development in NFL media, that the NFL is going to mandate that head coaches talk during games in the 2024 season. Each team has to provide a head coach. So they'll have an interview in the first half with one team and in the second half with the other, which is a departure from the previous rules. What you guys are used to watching is seeing these quick little interviews before or after halftime or right before kickoff, where let's throw down to the sideline and Carissa Thompson, and she's standing next to Ron Rivera, and she says, "Coach, you guys are without two left tackles today. You're down to your third guy on the roster. Are you sure you're going to be good enough to win?" or whatever. And then he says, we're going to do what we can. We're going to elevate
our really game. Well, okay.
This is how we found out when Rivera said, remember, at halftime of the Bears game coming out of halftime. What did you say to the team? Well, I didn't say anything. I'll let them do the talking, okay? But there is normally an interview before the game starts, right before the game, right before the kickoff of the second half, or maybe walking into the locker room. And that was the option given to coaches before. But now, you see this in other sports, Major League Baseball, when the manager's in the dugout wearing the headset, and some of the other games that you guys watch. In hockey, you see this on the bench where Spencer Carberry's got the headset on, and he's talking, coming back from break. They want these interviews done during the actual game with these coaches.
So, for me, 90-some percent of them are, I don't say a waste of time, because that's not how I feel. They're non-needle movers, for the most part, for me. It's a cliche. It's kind of it's hard to get a probing, in-depth kind of question. They're looking to get out of there. The host, it's almost like or the sideline reporter almost like feels bad having to ask them to interrupt their job, etc. But every 1 out of 10, every 1 out of 20, you get that Rivera answer. You get that, oh my God, my jaw's on the floor. What are you talking about? What are you doing, dude? Like, holy crap. And that's why it's worth it to me. See what I'm saying? Like, you watch it just in case you see something. Most of the time when I'm watching like a Tuesday night NBA game late at night, or I'll, you know, flip around to MLB Network and see the Padres and the Mariners playing an interleague game, you're not going to see much. You'll see baseball, and it's fine. It's good. But you might see the thing you never saw. You might see the triple play. You might see the guy hit for the cycle. You might see the greatest catch you've ever seen. And that's kind of the point. You keep throwing it up at the wall in case something incredible sticks. So you brought up that Rivera example, which is a great one. Most of them, to me, are sort of non-needle movers. They're not that exciting. But every once in a while, you get that, I'm never going to stop thinking about this.
Yeah, so this is something that I need people to explain to me. And we can open up the phones, actually. That would help the process, I'm sure. 800-636-1067. MGM National Harbor listener lines available for you. Most fans routinely say they want to get rid of these types of interviews. And the idea is they don't help me. To your point, at a 90-some percent clip, nothing interesting is going to be said. Mediocre question gets asked. Answer that's a nothing burger retort. Maybe a second question, a second quick answer. Sometimes if the coach is really engaging, it can be entertaining. Like Mike McDaniel's normally good and funny and long-winded. But for the most part, there are guys that Belichick it and just three-word it. We got to play better. We got to coach better. You know, the Nick Saban thing? And I understand if you're sitting there telling me, I don't get anything out of this. It doesn't really enhance my experience. I just don't understand why anyone would say that it takes away from the experience. Like, there was a poll I saw, might have been Pro Football Talk did, and 88% of people said that they wish they didn't do these coaches' interviews. I don't understand that logic. I like seeing the demeanor of a coach, even if he doesn't say anything interesting. I know he's probably not going to. I expect to hear two answers that are 10 seconds long, that are cliches, that mean absolutely nothing. But it's a nice part of the furniture of the game for me. It's a nice part of the fabric to just see the personality a little bit, or how they're handling right before the game, either the jitters or during the game. Like, what's going on? Are they friendly? Are they pleasant? Do they call the person by their name? Are they a jerk? Are they terse? I like all of that. And even if you're not taking anything out of it at all, even to that extent, what is the harm here? I enjoy more access, more peeling back of the curtains, and it just seems like people go, oh, they're not going to say anything interesting. That's a waste of my time. Why? What's the harm?
I'd say close to where I am. I mean, I generally probably get less out of it even than you do, in the sense that, what do you have to do in the second half? Play better. Thanks so much for your time, right?
Well, like, there's not much. Stuff that's not real, that perpetuates old axioms. Like, we got to run the ball.
Yeah, we got to tackle. We got to get physical. You know, we got to want it more. I mean, you're going to hear a cliche, but to me, it's not as if they're not giving you coverage and have decided for that. Does that make sense? Like, there's not some super valuable thing they're going, well, we can no longer include this unbelievably informative piece of content because we have to do the coach talk.
Yeah, it's not a or where you're choosing that over something. It's just an additive supplement. It's a couple of seconds where maybe we would have been in the booth seeing Nance and Romo break down the game, and instead you go down to the coach on the sideline.
Yeah, to me, it's a non-offensive. Majority of the time, it's a nothing burger. But again, I think you sit through it for that occasional outburst one, that occasional weird thing, that occasional, oh my God, the guy just gave away everything, you know, type moment where either his guard's down or doesn't realize he's saying something so stupid, or he actually tells you they kicked our butt doing this and you actually get a great soundbite out of it. It's like one out of 20 where that happens. But the other 19 are unoffensive to me.
What I'm really interested in is, does the NFL allow these to be taped? Because the story here, the headline is, the NFL is going to mandate that the head coaches do in-game interviews. But I would say that we call the interview in hockey or in baseball with the coach or the manager an in-game interview. And most of those are recorded during the commercial break, and then they come back and they play it almost a lot of the time on like a split screen. You think about the NBA, you see this all the time. If you're watching TNT or something, comes back and most of the screen is the live game. And then on the bottom right, there's a little square where you can see whoever the sideline reporter is asking Steve Kerr questions, and he's talking about the game. And like, even if there's a basket made or whatever, you get some Nat sound and the crowd cheering, but you're listening to that interview and you can tell it just happened. That's an in-game interview, theoretically. But in all of those sports, baseball, basketball, hockey, the majority of them are actually taped. Now, I don't have a problem with that. I'm just saying, is that the plan, or are they looking for a live reaction? Because I do think if it really is about the consumer, and the head of NFL broadcast was asked, why are you doing this? Why are you changing this? Why do you mandate that the coaches have to do this? She said, well, it's better for our consumers and it's better for our TV partners. It's more entertaining product. Well, if that's the case, then you should actually make it have to be a live interview so that you might see a coach interviewing as something's happening on the field and reacting in real time, screaming or yelling or kind of making a cringe face or whatever. Whereas if you're just playing a taped interview, they're just right before a drive doing the same thing it would have been if it was right before halftime.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be curious to see about that. Like, is there a chance that they actually say, hey, these have to be live during the game. You don't have a choice. First half or second half, you get to choose if you're home, you know, which one you want to do. The other coach has to do the other half, and someone will grab you, and you got to give them a minute. I've been a sideline reporter before at all kinds of levels, high school football, done a little college stuff, whatever. Dealing with coaches, they are so annoyed to see you.
Yep.
Most of them are very professional, but they know the drill. They know it's mandated. Sure. They know it's part of the contract. They know that billions of dollars is changing hands between TV networks and the league, and it's still doesn't matter to them when you waddle up to them before a 3rd and 6 or, you know, in my case,
big play here, coach.
Or even at halftime.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're down by 10 or 12, even if you're winning, that these people are crazy and want to get in the locker room and draw up the next play. But especially if things aren't going well, I pity the reporter that's got to go up in the middle of the game and talk to a coach.
Totally. I mean, again, you can think of some of those moments. I will never forget Marty Schottenheimer talking to the reporter's last name was Beasley. I can't remember who the guy's first name was, but you saw this game, Bees, and like, well, they're down 30-0 at halftime or whatever. You know, just talking about like guts and desire and men being men or something like that. Like, I remember some of those moments. So it's not easy. It's awkward for the reporter, certainly, and like nobody really wants to be there, but the NFL's kind of on the cutting edge of this, where we're going. I mean, baseball's done this to a degree too, but they get it. The thing that wins now, the next frontier, is the access frontier, right? This Hard Knocks offseason thing is demystifying so much for me in terms of conversations and how these kind of decisions go. And I'm sure there are high-level ones where these guys are exchanging spreadsheets with information that I'll never have access to that's proprietary. But for the most part, it's just dudes sitting around talking about football, getting paid millions of dollars to do it, right? And I think people have, the league is kind of realizing this sort of Netflix documentary phenomenon of the thing that we can sell to get us even more, to get us to that further level domestically, because you're not doing any better on television. You're not doing any better in terms of live tickets. You've saturated the market there. You're winning. You've won. The next frontier is that access frontier. And I think it's going to become part of the furniture where they mandate it. But I think that's their next growth opportunity. I think they sense that.
Phones are open if you guys want to give us a take. Do you get anything out of those coaching interviews? You know, would you be okay seeing them go away? Or are you like me? And even though they're not overly informative, it's a part of the fabric that you kind of enjoy as you're watching these games. 800-636-1067. Danny, next, let's get into Jamin Davis. They're not saying this yet, but he's basically moved positions. And maybe he's fighting for a roster spot at this point. That's next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. G&D on The Fan, Jamin Davis, drafted as a linebacker, is playing almost exclusively at defensive end off the edge so far in camp. This is what a lot of people wanted, I think. You know, think about how Dan Quinn treated Micah Parsons, who was, people forget this, but an off-ball linebacker basically at Penn State, showed the propensity, though, to rush the passer. Nobody coming out of that draft and even camp and mini camp preseason, I don't think anybody had the idea that he was just going to be a full-time edge who would immediately be one of the better pass rushers in the National Football League. And that's what happened. And so Jamin Davis, who's shown the ability to rush the quarterback when he stands up and pins his ears back, it seemed like was a natural fit to move positions for Dan Quinn and be something of a Micah Parsons type project. Not to say he has that same potential or upside, but like that kind of mold from linebacker to edge. And we're already seeing it at training camp, Danny, but here's the problem. If you buy a lot of the reports are that he doesn't look natural, which you'd assume, that he's struggling a little bit, and that maybe he's fighting an uphill battle now as a roster bubble guy. And I just think it's way too soon to assume that. If you're moving his position, this staff's got to give him some leeway then, right? I mean, he was a first-round pick. It's not like he doesn't look like an NFL player. I think by the end of last season, that was a serviceable NFL linebacker. The biggest issue for Jamin Davis, who's 25 years old going into year four, is that he was a first-round pick. But if sight unseen, you just watched him play football at any point last year, you'd go, oh, I like that guy a little bit. He's fast. He's physical. He can move around pretty well. Like, that's an NFL player, and they should absolutely find a way to have him help this team. Hearing whether it was Hoffman suggest this on his show or other people talk about the idea that Jamin Davis could or might be cut, I hate the idea of that. I think he's a good enough football player for a team like Washington. He should be able to make this roster.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's special teams, for example. He's already on a contract. You're not going to save a bunch of money by not having him around. But if the argument is he going to be impactful this year? I could absolutely see a scenario where he's not, and he's, you know, reduced in role dramatically, especially given how they want to play. If they want to only have two linebackers on the field at certain points, or even major in that.
But let me ask you this, because I think that's a fair point. Mm-hmm. Don't you think then, in that situation where they're going with a two linebacker setup, which they probably should in today's NFL, play a lot of nickel, extra DBs, then it's Bobby Wagner and it's probably Frankie Louvu. To some extent, we're seeing Jordan McGee, even, mm-hmm. who they just drafted, get a lot of work at linebacker, the fifth round pick at a Temple that you and I really enjoyed talking to. No problem there. Then don't you think there's a role that you can carve out for a guy as athletic who moves as well as Jamin Davis, if you are a savant defensive coach?
Yeah, but to me, that's different than a position switch. And here's my analogy. One of my college teammates, good buddy, my name Ryan, got drafted as a middle infielder when he was in the minor leagues with the Dodgers, like after a second or during a second season. They said, we actually need you to play first base. And he knew that his career was over. Like, he knew that it was only a matter of time. He moved as a middle infielder with tools and trying to come up and be a pro hitter. And they were like, you now need to be a first baseman. And there are always, you know, he doesn't hit for near enough power to be a first baseman. He was going to be there to finish the season. He knew that was it. That's what this reminds me of. Saying, we're going to rush you sometimes. We're going to blitz you sometimes as an off-ball linebacker. Very different than go line up with the defensive ends. That, to me, is a bad sign for Jamin Davis and his chances to do anything for this football team this year. It means they don't really think much of him as a linebacker. If he's moving away from being a part-time pass rusher, a.k.a. blitzing sometimes or coming downhill or running to space, that's one thing. But putting your hand in the dirt or, you know, quote-unquote, obviously everybody does things a little bit differently in terms of, you know, some guys can stand up, some guys hand in the dirt, but the point is being a defensive end or edge, that's a bad sign. It's far different to me than we're going to have him rush and use what he does well, which is run straight. More so, we don't really think you can do that even. We're going to have you try this.
So this is what I expected. You know, I think when we did our bold predictions, I said before camp started, I thought he would actually be announced as basically an edge, as a defensive end. This is what I foresaw for this group trying to do, because it seems to me like he has the skills to actually help them in this regard. I don't know how to say this otherwise. In a defense, in an organization where your edges currently consist of Cleland Farrell, Dante Fowler, KJ Henry, and Andre Jones, other than the guy you paid Dorrance Armstrong, who's kind of the one proven guy that makes any real money, I just think there's a way to involve him. And I hope that that's the case. Trading him seems like cutting him seems like it would be just giving up way too soon.
There's no benefit to that.
Exactly, for this staff. Because he could be an extra body and a depth linebacker behind Luvu and Wagner with McGee, right? As you said, he could help on special teams. I just think also, this guy should have some trade value, I would think. Again, the tape on him, if you're not trying to make him look like a first-round pick, is not terrible. Teams are looking for starter kits. They're looking for fits schematically. And if you've got a plug-and-play position where you need someone to run sideline to sideline and maybe come downhill occasionally, then a 25-year-old change of scenery candidate who is going into year four, who was drafted, shouldn't have been, but was, at 19 overall, you got to be able to get something. So while it's been floated, maybe they cut him, maybe he doesn't make it, that's the kind of guy that I would be doing everything I can to try to get a fifth-round pick for, sixth-round pick or something, before I went that route. But I'm just not ready to throw in the towel on Jamin Davis yet.
So that's interesting. Throwing the towel for me, no. But am I optimistic about him and his production and this shift to defensive end slash edge slash rusher? No, either, because it's hard. I think we underestimate, for example, how ridiculous it was that LeVar Arrington, first time ever, just played with his hand in the dirt and had 10 sacks. Like, he was a linebacker his whole life, and then just, they said, 1 year, okay, on passing downs, rush the passer, and he had double-digit sacks.
And Marvin Lewis, 11 and a half sacks. I will say, though, it's a little easier than it once was. That could be true, that it's hard. I mean, in fact, it is true. I think we all agree. But, like, there's not, football is more positionless than it ever was. Like, there's no reason to look at it in a box, like he's suddenly becoming Ronaldo Wynn or Reagan Upshaw.
No, I know.
And your three-point stance, and you're rushing the edge like you're Ryan Kerrigan. You stand up at the line of scrimmage, and go get that guy. You know, it's undercomplicated.
No, I know what you mean.
A little bit of what it is.
But again, I maybe I'm overestimating, maybe I'm overrating taking him out of linebacker and putting him with the defensive ends position group, which is to me the report, and that's what's happened. That to me, I'm putting way more stock in. It sounds like is again, there's a difference between saying, and I've screamed this for 2 years, I don't think he's any good. I don't think he's special. But there's one thing he seemed to do okay, which was blitz. Run straight and fast, whether it was through a running back that was trying to block or bother a quarterback. He would have early success doing that, and then it seemed like they stopped doing it for weeks and months at a time even. You look at like his career sack totals, they're paltry, but they all came within the first couple weeks of a year, I remember. And you're going, okay, maybe they found something here. Have him do that if you're going to have him do something.
In the same way that I blamed to an extent, I mean, the real blame is the front office and the people that drafted him.
Yes.
And thought he was what he was. But Jack Del Rio got an X, not a sticker, but an X from me for not figuring it out, like,
yep,
you were just saying. And I would feel the same way about this staff. Like, this guy, it's not like me. You got to find a way for Danny Rubier to help you make plays.
That's a hard ask.
It's even by NFL standards defensively, it's a 90th percentile athlete via the metrics, right? Like, find a way to get this guy involved and help him get to a point where he can help you. That to me shouldn't be mission impossible if this defensive staff, which I think is one of the best in football, is as good as I'm anticipating. The Commanders play the Jets on August 10th, coming up next week, which is awesome. But a big preseason ahead at the Jets, at the Dolphins, and then hosting the Patriots, a tour of the AFC East. Jamin Davis is going to have to flash a few times to help his cause. Steve Wyche saw him and the rest of the Commanders at training camp over the weekend. The NFL Network host joins us next on Grant and Danny.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about this?
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.